I don't know how long I'd been walking around for. Sometimes you just need to get out to clear your head, you know? I was quite far from home by the time I looked up from the ground to see a beautiful boy standing in front of me. He was holding out a leaflet and smiling at me in a way that made me feel nourished and unexpectedly restored. I'd had a terrible few days, and even this snippet of attention felt luxurious. He looked down at the leaflet, and my gaze followed. It was for some sort of group, like a club, I guess. It seemed like it might be a bit new agey, you know, all crystals and free love and things. I don't mind that sort of stuff, really, although I've never been able to take it that seriously. It always seemed pretty harmless, though. "You seem sad," the beautiful boy said. "Do you want to talk about it?" And he put his hand on my arm. That gentle touch, combined with his sweetness, shattered the last of my self-possession. Before I knew what I was doing, everything just tumbled out, about my work being so much harder than I thought it would be, about feeling cut off from my friends lately, about never seeming to find the right man, one who would look after me but still respect my independence. The last said, a little slyly, of course, because even though it was inevitable that he'd turn out to be married or something and just being nice, it had been a long time since someone quite so attractive had paid me attention. He nodded sympathetically and invited me to come inside the centre for a drink and a chance to sit and talk for longer. Of course I said yes. The centre itself seemed to be like a kind of community centre. There were different rooms with activities going on, and we passed by a big hall where he told me they had talks from inspirational speakers. The real core of the centre was the auditing rooms, though, he told me. Private rooms where people would just sit and talk together for as long as they wanted. By the time he offered to show me one of these, I would have followed him anywhere. Inside the room were two chairs and a table in between. On the table, a box, kind of like an old-fashioned tape recorder, with wires coming out of it, and two canisters, clearly designed to be held. The E-meter, he told me, was just there to help people get in touch with their feelings. When I picked up one of the canisters, the dial on the top of the machine jumped suddenly, and I dropped it on the table with a clatter. He chuckled quietly and gestured to me to sit down. "So," he said, "you were telling me about your troubles with men and finding ones who'll treat you how you really need?" I'm not sure I'd really thought about it using that kind of language before, but I supposed he was right. I began to try to explain about the delicate balance between wanting to be nurtured and still wanting to feel like I was making my own decisions. He was such a good listener. Somehow, I don't even know how, really, I ended up talking about some of my sexual fantasies. I guess they all have the same kind of complicated mixture of wanting men to take control, but also wanting to feel like it's my choice to participate. "Oh, yes," he said. "I understand just what you mean." His eyes suddenly struck me as being the deepest brown I had ever seen. "You want to have opportunity to really give in to what your body wants, rather than having to explain yourself all the time." I frowned and stared down at the machine on the table. Was that what I wanted? Maybe it was. I certainly hadn't thought about it that way before. Seeing my uncertainty, he suggested that maybe using the E-meter might help. As I tentatively picked up the canisters, he explained that the idea was that our bodies know more about what we want than our brains do sometimes, and the E-meter takes readings from our physical reactions to things without the filter of our brains getting in the way. "For example," he said, "why don't you try telling me about something you've always imagined, something you've thought about, that has given you these kinds of complicated feelings? Whatever you might think about it, the E-meter will be able to tell you what you really feel, and looking at the dial, we'll be able to tell as well. He flashed the sweetest, most hopeful smile at me. I really had no idea if it would do any good, but I figured it couldn't do any harm, and making this boy happy felt increasingly satisfying. Even so, I blushed as I began to talk. I told him about wanting to be taken, to be overpowered, unable to resist. He nodded in encouragement. Loads of people have these kinds of fantasies, he said. I did know that, but somehow being told it in that moment made me feel less conflicted than I usually did. I went on to tell him things I'd never told anyone before, things I felt deeply ashamed to admit wanting. I told him how I imagined myself sometimes being trapped by a group of men, how they would laugh and taunt me while they used my body for their own pleasure. I squeezed my eyes shut tightly, trying to ignore the treacherous wetness in my cunt as I told him about imagining that they weren't even men I found attractive, how the grosser and uglier they were, the hotter I found the fantasy. Look, he said. Opening my eyes, I kept them fixed firmly on the table. I was too embarrassed to meet his gaze. Look, he repeated. Look at the dial. It had moved, clearly, to the other end of the scale, passing through the red and black sections and into the small sliver of green right at the far edge. Seeing my puzzled expression, he explained, flashing me another of his brilliant smiles. It means your body has reached a new clarity. You've moved beyond one of the barriers holding you back from being your true self. I frowned. But that would mean... Yes, he interrupted gently. Your true self really wants those things to happen. As I began trying to process this, to get to grips with the significance of what the boy was telling me, there was a sudden bell from the hallway. Oh, that's the bell for our main speaker session, he exclaimed. I have to go now. I'd love to talk with you some more another time, though. I'm quite new to being an auditor, but you really are fascinating. Please tell me you'll come back tomorrow. Bewildered as I was about what had just happened, I swelled with the compliment, and I didn't want to pass up the opportunity to see more of this boy, this auditor, as he called himself. I visited the centre every day for the next 3 weeks. Each session with my auditor, as even I had come to think of him, gently led me to describing my longings and fantasies in more and more detail. Every disgusting, awful fantasy I had ever had, I explained to him, carefully watching the dial on the e-meter to ensure I was being as true to my body as I could be. I felt ashamed and relieved, and I began increasingly to rely on the e-meter and my auditor to help me to understand my true feelings about things. At the end of a particularly intense session, he gave me a long, close hug and suggested that I might want to stay for the group talk today. This week's speaker is such an extraordinary person, my auditor said. He's so in touch with himself, with his body. You will come and hear him, won't you? I told him of course I would come and listen to the speaker with him. He beamed and took my hand. When we reached the entrance to the hall, he explained that he had to go and take care of something, but that I should sit wherever I liked and he would find me afterwards. I was a little disappointed, but was soon swept along by the flow of people into the hall. The floor of the hall was covered with all of these bean bags. I found a space where I could still see the door and settled onto one of them. I was a bit surprised when a man I didn't know flopped to the ground next to me. He flashed me a brilliant smile and I felt myself warm to him. I looked around to my auditor but couldn't see him. As the speaker began to introduce the day's topic, how to unlearn the suspicion society teaches us to have for our bodies, the stranger next to me waved to another man who'd just entered to come and sit with us. The new man was a fair bit older and gave me a look that made me uneasy, although I couldn't really have explained why. He sat next to his friend, slightly behind me, meaning I could only see him out of the corner of my eye. As I glanced back a few times, I realised that he wasn't paying attention to the speaker at all, but was instead staring at my body. I suddenly felt very exposed in my flimsy summer dress. I wished I had a beanbag near enough that I could move it between us without it being obvious that something was wrong. I tried to focus on the speaker's words and ignore him. The speaker was explaining how sometimes we don't even know what we really need. Sometimes other people can see us better than we see ourselves. As I began to consider that, I felt the man move closer behind me, the heat from his body radiating against me. I turned to look at the man next to me and was shocked to realise that not only was he also staring at my body, but looking down, he was gently, casually stroking his cock. I gasped quietly and looked around the room. Surely someone would see what he was doing and object. No one seemed to have noticed. The speaker's voice echoed out across the room. "We must give ourselves over to transformative experiences," he was explaining. "We must allow ourselves to be shown who we are by those around us and by how our bodies react to them rather than our minds." The man behind me pressed into my back and I felt his cock against my ass crack. His hand began to round my hip slowly and slide up my ribs. I was frozen with fear and confusion. I looked up to realise that the speaker was staring directly at me. He could clearly see what was happening as the man behind me slipped the straps of my dress down my arms and began to squeeze my breasts. The speaker's words rang in my mind. Surely this isn't what he meant. As if reading my mind, the speaker gave the slightest of nods and looked away. Unable to move, unsure if this is what was supposed to be happening, I sat silently in the middle of the hall, tears beginning to tumble down my face as both men moved closer into me and used their fingers to stroke, squeeze, and probe all over my body. As the talk began to wind up, the congregation came to its feet. The two men pressed me between them, one with his cock hard against my ass, the other rubbing himself with a quiet urgency against my hip. I couldn't understand how no one could see what was happening to me. The man next to me flashed his brilliant smile again, scooped a tear from my cheek and tasted it from his fingertip. Then both he and the man behind me suddenly withdrew and left me giddy on my feet alone. The crowd swiftly left the hall, and I realised they ought to follow. I didn't know where to go, or how to process what had just happened. As I began to walk, I finally saw my auditor walking purposefully towards me. "Wasn't he wonderful?" he exclaimed. I looked at him silently through my tear-laden lids. He seemed to assume I was overwhelmed by the speaker's words, and I didn't know how to explain what had happened. His enthusiasm was so adorable, I couldn't bear to crush it. Taking my silence for assent, he took my hand. "Come and meet the speaker," he said. The speaker's room was a jumble of chairs and books and e-meters. In one corner, a long sofa appeared to be the only space not already occupied. The speaker looked up as we entered and smiled warmly, waving us inside. I felt immediately swept up in his charismatic presence. "Come in, come in," he exclaimed. "You must be the girl I've heard so much about." I blushed to think what he could have heard about me. "Yes, yes, I see what you mean," he said, speaking over his shoulder to my auditor as he settled me on the sofa. His eyes were hypnotic, and I barely noticed as he stepped in front of me, stroking my arms. "I saw you in the hall." His voice dropped almost to a whisper. "Did you enjoy my talk?" I nodded mutely. "Do you feel like you listened to your body? Really listened to it?" I stared up at him, unsure how to respond. He placed his fingers under my chin. "What is your body telling you now?" His eyes twinkled with amusement as I blushed fiercely. He shifted slightly, and I realized my head was exactly level with his crotch. I could see the outline of his cock pressing slightly against the fabric. His hand on my face pulled gently, bringing my lips closer to it. The smell of him was intoxicating. He shifted closer still and used his other hand to undo his zip. I gasped and he chuckled quietly. His fingers on my chin were gently insistent until my mouth opened just a little. The tip of his cock rubbed against my lips and involuntarily I parted them to let him in. The shock of his head against my tonsils made me gag. The speaker shifted his weight and pinned my head against the back of the sofa, thrusting into my mouth with increasing force, reducing me to a warm, wet vessel for his lust. He grunted and tensed himself as he came deep in the back of my throat. In a sudden moment of panic, I realized that I had to get out. Pushing him away and myself up from the sofa, I turned, knocking into a pile of papers in my rush to escape. As I took a step towards the door, I heard a voice. My voice. I was explaining how I had always wanted to be gang raped. How I imagined a room full of vile old men abusing me. How the more disgusting they were, the more I wanted them to fuck me and use me in increasingly perverted ways. I froze in horror at my own words, my own voice describing these awful things. In our little room, speaking just to my auditor, it felt safe and somehow not entirely real to talk about my fantasies. Hearing them played back to me, in front of this man I didn't know, had only just met, and had just forced himself on me, made me hear them anew. My panic resolved itself into one clear realization. My auditing sessions had been recorded. I turned to glare at my auditor, betrayal radiating from me. He simply smiled and nodded. And I understood there was nothing I could do. Everything I had said, all the terrible things I had described wanting to happen to me, they had them all on tape. "What do you want me to do?" I asked. "Nothing your body doesn't want you to do anyway," the speaker said quietly behind me. I stared dejectedly at my auditor, wishing more than anything that he would save me, knowing that, of course, he wouldn't. This had been the plan all along, I realized. He had preyed on me, coaxed me into talking about more and more shameful things, into exposing myself so completely, so utterly, that I would do anything to keep the things I had said a secret. Anything. I stood beside the stage, hands cuffed to the bar secured to the back of my collar, listening to the speaker explaining to the congregation that learning to listen to your body is the most important thing you can do. Giving yourself over to what your body tells you it needs is the only way to really clear yourself of all the terrible things society forces on you, he explained. I shifted a little, feeling the cool air against my skin. The bell rang, signalling that it was time for me to make my entrance. As carefully as I could, I walked out onto the stage, the loose, gauzy fabric attached with a single knot on my shoulder was already slipping, and I was grateful for the blindfold that protected me from the gaze of the crowd. This is what it is, really, to give yourself over to your body, the speaker declared. I felt his hand on my breast, gently at first, then pinching at my nipple. As I gasped and twisted, the fabric gave way and slid from my body onto the stage. The speaker began to walk, his fingers still secured around my nipple, making me follow. As we reached the edge of the stage, unseen hands took hold of me and lifted me onto the floor. The next hours were a blur of hands and fingers and cocks and mouths on me, inside me, some smooth and gentle, some rough and urgent, but all demanding I give myself up to them. I did. Finally, the flurry of touches and penetrations slowed and eventually stopped. I lay discarded on the floor for I don't know how long, until I felt gentle hands undoing my cuffs and collar. Placing his hands over my eyes, the auditor slowly removed my blindfold. Holding me against him, he carried me to the side of the room. Here, he said, handing me first a bottle of water, and then a pair of E-meter canisters. Tell me how your body feels, he said. Tell me how much it needed these things to happen. Sobbing, I began to confess. The weeks and months began to take on a routine of sorts, listening to talks and being offered to the speakers afterwards, group sessions in which my body would be used to help different people to follow their body's desires, auditing sessions where I would be encouraged to explain how much I needed to be used like this. And any time I began to waver or seem like I might be allowing my thoughts to take over, rather than listening to my body, I would be played tapes of myself, describing awful, disgusting things I had fantasized about, while the same things were being done to me for real. The boundary between fantasy and reality dissolved entirely, and with it all ability I had to think. Eventually, I was allowed to leave the centre from time to time. I never went very far, and the people all rushing around outside seemed very strange to me. I was encouraged to view them with pity that they weren't able to hear what their bodies were saying to them. I began to feel sorry for them, and my auditor suggested that I could try to help them if I liked. So I began once a week or so to go out with a stack of leaflets. I watched the girl from across the street. She seemed tired, world-weary, alone. Holding a leaflet out in front of me, I went to intercept her. Startled, she stopped and looked up at me. Holding her gaze, I glanced down at the leaflet, giving her a moment to take it in. "You seem sad," I said. "Do you want to talk about it?" I gave her arm a gentle squeeze.